Resonance Rewind.
With Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill,
and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos. Ooh.
The 100th Resonance Rewind. Surely the only way to celebrate is with Granny Gregson's glorious grogs. Or will that invite Dr. Sturm to the party? Either way, we could be in for a crushing time. It's got mini mokes in it and the clap of thunder from the prisoner. What's not to appreciate about this 100th celebration? Can't stand the rain? Surely not. Robin Pierce, summation, please.
Summation. First of all, happy birthday, Resonance Rewind, where have the past 99 weeks and this one gone. And to celebrate, of course, we celebrate the Great British Summer taken to extremes in episode 8, season 4 of The Avengers, broadcast in 1965, specifically November 1965, which is odd when you think about it. It was only 2 months before Batman took to the airwaves in January 1966. And I feel that both series kind of play into each other in that the Avengers was the Batman's precursor in its style of campy, over the top, play it straight, absurdist humor. And this is one of the episodes which plays off best all of those qualities, where they could be absolutely hilarious and sinister at the same time. Because I remember watching some of these at the time when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I found them terrifying. Why? Because I lived in a rural area, and a lot of these actually take place in an idyllic countryside setting, somewhere, I presume, in the home counties, where you've got local eccentrics aplenty, and you've got a mad scientist and a fiendish scheme. Now, this time we have a poacher going about his business, setting some snares, when it starts to rain. The rain increases exponentially until it actually drowns the poacher. This is immensely localized rain, and it kills the guy. It's raining so hard, it pounds his imprint into the ground. Now, if that doesn't scream Adam West Batman, I don't know what can. So the Avengers are called to investigate. This time, John Steed, of course, played by Patrick McNee, with relative newcomer at this stage, Diana Rigg as Emma Peel. So let's take a stock look at our characters. One of the first people they talk to is the dead poacher's brother, Eli, played by Welsh character actor Talrin Thomas, who is convinced that Eli has met his maker because he was a sinner. And he used to steal regularly, not so much poaching, because it's not stealing if you eat it, but he used to go to the local distillery and presumably corporate headquarters of, and I quote, Granny Gregson's glorious grogs. Now, they have an immense amount of spring water. Is something going on over there, or is it a natural phenomenon? Let's take a look at another local eccentric. Jonah, played by Noel Purcell, a guy with a biblical beard and a bellowing prophetic voice, who is so convinced it's the end of days, he's building his own ark. Does he know something? Is it indeed God at work? Or is it something going on at the distillery under the leadership of Professor Strum, who, in a bid to water his garden a little bit easier, has developed what may be the greatest weapon since the atomic war, and he wants to sell it to an unfriendly foreign power. Let's take it from there. Brolly's up, people.
Yes, Professor Sturm, of course, taking his particular line from what a tremendous weapon it would actually be to control the weather, something which, of course, Sean Connery would manifest once again in the Avengers movie of 1997, which, of course, may well.
What's interesting here as well, Alex, is that, you know, we found out retrospectively that the whole weather controlling aspect of this episode may not be that fanciful, because over in Vietnam, cloud seeding experiments were indeed taking place.
And when we talk about the USA and their entry into the arms race, and of course their impact as far as arms are concerned, who better to turn to than Marine reporter extraordinaire when she was over in California? Of course, it's Kathy Manso. Welcome, Kathy. I suspect one of your first experiences of traditional Britishness and the awesome world of fire and brimstone, Jonah, fire and brimstone sermons. and the way in which British people can take tea at the most inopportune times. Kathy, what did you make of this particular one?
I was thoroughly entertained. I had a great time. But I had a great time just because, you know, I enjoyed the plot. I liked the twist. I think I just really liked certain characters like Bernard. Like, oh my goodness. And I also appreciated everyone's facial reactions. I liked that we were still in theater, not in film.
I mean, clearly we had expert professors who would actually be astounded at the level of humidity, which actually isn't so high when we actually look at the whole process. Brian Clemens, the creator of the series, actually maintains that the credited writer, Colin Finbow, didn't actually write a word of the script because it was completely rewritten and redrafted. And there were concerns being expressed that maybe they were veering into more science fiction fantasy land from that point of view. The peril, of course, of being nearly crushed to death by the Professor Sturm's scenario, clearly problematic, especially when we see what happens to John Steed's bowler hat as a matter of course. Unfortunately, he didn't just wear the bowler hat in this episode, he also wore a riding hat as well as driving the Mini Moak. Jenny Bill, what are your thoughts on this one? Is it something that you channel the views of your clergy-based father when it comes to the cloud is up there, the cloud is there, we are doomed?
I have no idea. I have to say that to Robin, that I absolutely see no parallel between this and Batman whatsoever. but I understand what you're saying, but I was like, well, I never kind of thought of it like that. The thing I really impressed me with this episode was that Emma Peel just looked amazing in every single scene. She just came out like she'd spent 2 hours in the wardrobe, and I wondered how on earth she managed to do it when she didn't even have a suitcase with her. So I thought it was really, really fantastic. Apart from that, I have to say I thought it was a load of rubbish and ridiculously stupid. I've never liked the Avengers, and I thought this was an example of an absolutely awful episode. This was awful. I just thought it was awful. I can't stand this sort of ridiculousness. Well, maybe appreciate it, but not my cup of tea.
It's just as well we clearly didn't actually have the Winged Avenger to actually draw the parallels between Batman even more gloriously to the fore with respect to that whole process. Robin, like myself, again, echoing the whole notion of the uncanny, the beyond sort of lines that might be there, and the investigative scenarios which are there, and of course the evil German scientist, the mad German scientist who obviously addresses his whole process. We have Jeffrey Palmer, of course, a much beloved character actor, also appearing in various ways. Did you feel that the actual episode, I mean, how can you counteract Jenny's very robust criticism of the actual piece from the point of view?
That definitely, that was robust. Yes, I feel that whatever I say, I am going to be hurling myself at Mach 1 to a brick wall. But just to clarify, my parallels with Batman were in the style of the humour, the absurd, over-the-top tone of it all. Having a man actually pounded into the ground with rainwater, leaving only his Wellington boots behind. It's that kind of visualization and the intrepid earnestness with which our heroes deal with the wildly improbable scenario that they are dealt with. I mean, nobody noticed among the cast that Steed was dressed absurdly in Edwardian hunting gear. And is he not supposed to be a spy? I mean, does he know nothing about keeping undercover? But this is the Avengers as I remember them best, particularly with the kind of eccentrics that they would regularly have on board. Definitely Talvin Thomas, who was a much-loved character actor at the time with his South Walian accent. And I got to ask, is that what I sound like to the rest of you guys? Why is Kathy Mansell so bad? Really? Really,
no, no, no.
Really, is that how I sound to you, boyo?
Oh, always, yeah. In fact, when we first met via the telephone system, I thought it was Taffin come to life. Really, clearly, the message was there. It's amazing. There were
a huge compliment, a huge compliment. But you know, it was. You always also like Robin. The Boy Wonder, not Robin Pierce, had to be rescued by Batman to the point that Frank Gorshin called him, you know, Robin the Boy hostage. We always had to have Emma Peel in some kind of peril, almost like a serial. And in this, of course, she is in a wine press. And even her dialogue at the point where she's in the wine press is very much kind of Adam West Burt Ward, in that all she says is, "You diabolical mastermind, you." You know, I would have gone much more colourful than that, but this was 1965 and people didn't actually swear then. But I keep thinking, every time I saw Jonah, and let's see, he didn't have an indoor voice, I kept thinking, if this episode, God forbid, was ever going to be remade, would that not have to be Brian Blessed in that role?
Water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink, only wine to drink, basically, is the system there. And we never have...
Only if you're working for Steed, and Jacques.
Exactly, because clearly you wanted to have the Jacques for the French element to work through that. And
you've got the master spy giving his own name five times.
Yes, yeah, the mystery there. And, of course, a little nod in the direction, of course, one of Annette André's best friends, actually, sadly, again, no longer with us, Sue Lloyd, who portrays the other female, the secretary, in the Granny Gregson's Glorious Grogs Factory. Kathy, let's turn to your good self once again. I mean, lines such as, "I had an aunt who used to make biscuits like this," when Sir Arnold Kelly's dead body is found in a field, also crushed to death, drowned by that single cloud. Look at that cloud. It hasn't moved. It gets bigger. It's clearly a sign. What aspects kind of did you find positive about this to, again, counteract the evil mastermind of Jenny Bill?
No, I mean, I understand where Jenny's coming from. You know, I do. It's ridiculous, but that's where I'm finding the entertainment. Like, because for me, I've had a week where I've slept like 4 3-hour every night. I've been constantly in a computer lab. And now this was like the first time in my day today where I was like, "Well, I get to watch something." And I'm like, "Oh, and it's not serious? This is nice." So I knew it was going to be ridiculous from the first drowning, murder, smothering. I'm not, but it set the tone. And that's, I think once you know what you're in for with the first few lines that's already set up, you kind of have to be like, I'm either going to be very against this or for it. And I just wasn't here to fight it. I really wasn't. I mean, how can you, when someone introduces themselves as Steed, and Joyce gives him a face exactly like anyone would give someone who introduced themselves like that? I really related well with Joyce that moment. But I am really impressed with the female roles, like, especially for something that's in 1965. Like, this is, I enjoy that we have a female journalist and she's like, "Well, I'm going to do it. So I'm going." I mean, her lines can be ridiculous, sure, but I appreciate the representation.
Was this the first episode of The Avengers you've ever seen, Kathy?
Yeah, I've never seen this. This is, it was completely new. I had no idea what was going into it.
Interesting. It's sort of a latter point there. We sadly couldn't get Jessica Burtis around in time. She was called into work, but it'd be fascinating to find out what Jessica's views are on the whole piece. Is this a period, basically, where surrealism, Robin, is very much the fore? You mentioned, obviously, the Batman link. You mentioned the 60s scenario. This is 20 years after the end of World War II, of course. We still have the German notion from that perspective there. And the title, of course, The Avengers, avenging evil, nefarious wrongdoings, going way back to Police Surgeon, where it's
well,
the
absolutely.
Death of...
Well, they were avenging the death of the police surgeon's, was it wife?
In the wife, indeed. Yeah.
I think there's definitely a change of mood here from your sort of hard-nosed detective stories to something that was lighter fare. And I think that the Avengers is a very hard one to try and explain because it's set, I would say, in the same English countryside as, say, for example, Margaret Rutherford's Miss Marple in films like Murder Most Foul and things like that, where everybody speaks absolutely perfect English. It's picturesque.
Welsh.
Oh, and Welsh. And there's the... Hang on, did you say unless they're Welsh? You did, didn't you? You cad, sir. You absolute cad. You're a bounder. You've made me lose my train of thought now. There's something sinister in the background. And this series terrified me as a child. I know that I've seen what we've got upcoming, and we're going to be covering one of the ones that almost traumatized me at the age of about 8, where there's something that looks like a shoebox going around killing people. I mean, yeah, you can take that look off your face, Kathy Manso. And Jenny can stop giggling as well. I was sensitive back then.
It's a thingamajig.
I'm sorry, Robin. I'm having a hard time because I literally laughed out loud over the ridiculous moment. So,
but it's have you never been caught in a shower, Kathy, and thought, but if this really, really gets going, we could all drown?
You know what? I'm sure there's been a time. No.
Was it my mind working the way that it does? Or was a logo of Granny Gregson's Glorious Grogs a little bit off with the old lady in a rocking chair showing off a very large phallic-looking cucumber? Or was it just me?
And that actually, Robin, was indeed Granny Gregson's first official distillation.
Oh, yeah.
The cucumber, which was very important to actually use. It probably gives it its special body.
The look that Steed gives it. I mean...
Although, be careful, Robin. You don't want to go down another rocket line, as occurred in a recent episode of Robert Residence Rewind, where we talked about Fireball XL5. So that's another issue entirely. In terms of...
Let it go, Alex. Let it go.
In terms of the characters, let's turn to Jenny. Is it a case of Emma Peel? And that's it for yourself.
Yes, I mean, obviously, I have seen The Avengers before, and I know what it's... I know what to expect when I'm watching it, but I didn't feel that this was a particularly, for me personally, a really awful episode. There's other episodes I've watched that I've enjoyed a lot more, but I was struck that I just thought that she just looked amazing in every single, you know, she really had a whole outfit, the hair. I loved the hat that she had on for the rain, her makeup, everything. She just looked absolutely amazing in every single scene, and so many different really fabulous costumes. So that was the thing that really stood out to me. Yeah. So yeah,
the Jean Muir costume coming to the fore there. Interestingly, the response of producer Brian Tesler, when he was actually sent a first draft of the programme as programme controller, was, I wonder if the scripts aren't on the whole veering too much and too often toward fantasy. Aren't we ever going to get any more good, fast, straightforward thrillers with action and wit? So clearly there was concern at ABC, Robin, that maybe this was not necessarily the way to take the series. And yet, arguably, it proved to be one of the reasons for the series' subsequent success and translation into colour, COLOR, for the American market.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine how they would pitch this, because I've watched a lot of the early episodes, and the first three seasons are vastly different from the fourth season on. And in watching this, I kind of understand how the new Avengers in the late 70s came a little bit short, because time had moved on. And that kind of humour, that kind of eccentricity wouldn't play, because it seemed that the world had got, I don't know, somehow smaller, and in becoming smaller had somehow become a little bit more cynical. But this has a charm that kind of evokes memories of a Great Britain that I'm not sure ever really existed. But, you know, it should have.
And what a perfect time, given the 70th anniversary Jubilee celebrations in which Paddington Bear is represented as epitomising the whole heart of the country, just as James Bond was 10 years ago, that maybe, as I say, we're still actually in that part. Are we saying then that the position of Taffin's Eli, that somehow he would be sectioned these days or put into care in the community programme and not allowed to actually support his good friend Jonah with his belief that the Ark needs to be built now?
No, he would be around because I have encountered people who are a great deal like Eli. I mean, I'm sure you'll find them in just about any town or village. He wasn't that much of a stretch. I'm embarrassed to say that actually I hadn't thought of Talbrin Thomas in years, where he used to pop up in a lot of series. I mean, he did a couple of Doctor Who's, I'm sure, with John Pertwee back in the day. He was the Saint. You know, we used to see him fairly regularly. And I noticed that he sadly passed away on the 4th of November, 1982, 4 days after his 60th birthday. But, you know, to me, he was kind of an authentic character because, you know, you do have your local whimsical people, your eccentric people, and your oddballs. I mean, for all I know, I might be one of them. I don't know.
Jonah Barnard, of course. The name Jonah possibly gives it away in terms of his referencing. And, of course, the biblical beard, as you said, very much channeling the notion of Noah and the Ark. And, of course, there is that connection as well that sort of we see writ large, including, of course, the presentation of the fire and brimstone speech to a small boy and his pet dog, whilst the wind-up gramophone player plays in the background. Again, you know, that whole notion of where you're going to actually do that. And you could say, again, preaching to the choir, preaching to the converted, or not actually sort of opening up one's ears to listen with. Kathy, what about yourself and characters? Are you going to go down the line of, well, Jean Muir's costumes for Diana Rigg were so wonderful, it has to be hers? Or are you going to select somebody else? Could it be Sir Arnold Kelly? Could it be Dr. Sturm himself? Or indeed, would you consider actually going down the line of one of the other minor characters, possibly the secretary, Joyce, played by Sue Lloyd?
It's, you know, I always think about this whenever I watch, like, who's going to be my favorite character, because I know this question is inevitable. I thought I was going to agree with Jenny, because I thought the exact same thing. I pretty much want to own everything she has. Like, there's, and I, her cheeks look amazing all the time. So I really did like her as a character and everything, but I think I'm going to give it to the bowler hat as the best character. I think it really, really emphasized what the show is about. He used it for everything. I didn't know that was possible. I mean, even at the end. So that's my vote.
And of course, the bowler hat made the ultimate sacrifice as well. And as Mrs. Peel said, at least it didn't feel much pain in the end.
That's why you got to give it the recognition. Yeah.
Well, Kathy, in some episodes, the bowler hat he wears is actually made of steel and he uses it as a weapon.
See, now I really understand Jenny's point. I hear it. I hear it a hard.
Purely because he didn't want to be seen to be using guns, which was far too American and dangerous. Maybe, I'm just saying, you'd have less school shootings if people were allowed to have steel-rimmed bowler hats as opposed to automatic rifles. It's a thought put out there.
That's an interesting thought that you put that out there, you know, because we also have a show that's promoting this idea of crushing people. Maybe, I don't...
But one person at a time, that's the important thing. To fine-tuned examples, and only operated by Dr. Sturm, of course, which is German for storm, if you didn't want to actually sort of over-egg the pudding even more. As a weapon, do you think it would work, Robin? I mean, that weather control thing you mentioned, obviously there's still a lot of debate about controlling the weather and actually using that as a weapon for armies. Lots of scientists have spent many a time working for various countries trying to work on this.
You could wreak economic havoc by preventing rain on crops or just flooding crops or areas out. This is just a crazy sort of fantasy extrapolation of that, where you can aim the rain at one person. I think it would be an absolutely wonderful weapon. You know, there's no evidence other than puddles which dry up. And, you know, it's a little bit like the Roald Dahl story, A Lamb to the Slaughter, where a frozen leg of lamb is used to murder somebody and then cooked up and fed to the investigating police officers. There's no evidence. I you know, and in Britain, who's going to notice? All you've got to do is stay indoors.
It may already be there, but who or what would be your personal favourite character?
Me? Eli, Talvin Thomas. He just made the whole thing work for me.
I'm going to go for Joyce Jason, played by Sue Lloyd, because I think she managed to at least redress the balance and keep things on form. But Dr. Sturm, I think, does deserve special mention, as played, of course, by Albert Leven from that perspective, and well worth addressing for months. Okay, we will be having a little bonus treat for Siren Radio listeners to Resonance Rewind as part of our 100th celebration. I've basically sort of collected together a range of tunes which feature rain in the title. And if you'd like to identify the names of those titles, then basically we might even have a little prize for you. I don't know, but it's just there. So I'm just putting in after the end credits of Resonance Rewind has actually rolled. That's the kind of thing anything we'll have. And we'll still find out some way or somehow what Jessica Burtis makes of this particular thing. But Kathy Manser, what is your score out of 10 on that Likert scale for, or like it, depending on your pronunciation? It's very confusing. What a surfeit of H2O is going to merit?
Yeah, this is a hard one because I know I had a good time because I was taking it as ridiculous. Would I recommend this to anyone? It's hard. It's like Robin said earlier, it's hard to explain this to someone where I just don't think they're going to have such a good time with it. So because of that, I feel like I'm going to be kind enough to say a 5, only because I wouldn't watch it again, but I appreciate the laughs.
And I suspect with respect to Jenny Bill, the clue is actually in the title of the piece, Surfeit of H2O. You're going to give it a 2. Is that right?
God, how did you know? That's really spooky. I am going to give it a 2. And that's just for Emma Peel's amazing outfits.
Yeah. Because of the somewhat overemphasis on the fighting at the last sequence, again, something which arguably was borrowed by Batman in terms of the battle in the weather without the wham, pow, zap and cowie, etc. I'm giving this an 8.4. on the Richter scale, an 8.4, because I did feel it was genuinely entertaining and a good way to celebrate something which is tremendously British, which is the way we like to talk regularly about the weather, because frankly, there's little else in our country to talk about. I'm sorry, but there we are. Robin.
I'm actually hot on your heels and going with an 8 on this one, because if I wanted to tell somebody, right, Avengers, Emma Peel, John Steed, Black and White, watch this one. It's a better representation than the Christmas one we've covered, or the one where people being miniaturized. I think this was the Avengers of my childhood in a nutshell.
Mm. Too many Christmas trees, and of course, Mission Highly Improbable, being the two episodes in previous Resonance Rewinds and the first century Resonance Rewinds, which you can check out and find out what the team made of those particular episodes as well. Next week, well, Jenny will be delighted because we have a Bat-tastic edition of the Adam West Burt Ward era of Batman, in which not only do we get Robin's favourite Catwoman, But we also get a fine American songstress called Leslie Gore, famous for It's My Party, singing all manner of things, including California Nights. And if you add on to that, three hench people who are called Spade, Marlowe and Templar, you can appreciate that there's an interesting connection there between the literary allusions between hardboiled detective fiction, Simon Templar, Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe, and indeed their perversion and corruption to the dark side with respect to Catwoman. It's that darn Catwoman, Scat Catwoman, two episodes of Batman in one, a two-for-one episode of Resonance Rewind as we move into our second century to Jenny Bill, to Kathy Manson.
And how appropriate, Alex, because we started episode one with Batman, enter Batgirl, exit Penguin. So it's only right that we go back to the Bat for our second run of 100.
As clearly we pointed this out, Robin, you know, there is a bit of planning that goes into this particular programme, despite other sort of folk thinking it's very random. It's not. But then again, it may be. Keep on resonating.
Everything was so grand, yes it was. Now that we my mind. I see her face wherever I go. She didn't say it, but I know she doesn't love me. I thought that I was king. She didn't want to play my game. If I had the sun to give her in the morning, she'd rather have the rain than anything I could give her. I'd give her anything that you care to name. She'd rather have the rain. Today I had to realize that every dream just can't come true. I know there's nothing I can do to make her want me. I could take the sun from heaven, tie it to a silver chain, bring it so it shines upon her.
Rather have the rain. wish that it would go and let me cry in vain and let me be alone again. The only girl I care about is gone away, looking for a brand new start. But little does she know that when she left that day, along with her she took my heart. Rain, please tell me now, does that seem fair? For her to steal my heart away when she don't care. I can't love another when my heart's somewhere far away. The only girl I care about is gone away, looking for a brand new start. But little does she know that when she left that day, along with her she took my heart.
Love and rain.
Love.
7 lonely days and a dozen towns ago, I reached out one night and you were gone. Don't know why you'd run, what you're running to or from. All I know is I want to bring you home. So I'm walking in the rain, thumbing for a ride on this lonely Kentucky back road. I've loved you much too long, my love's too strong to let you go, never knowing what went wrong. Kentucky rain keeps pouring down, and up ahead's another town that I'll go walking through with the rain in my shoes. Searching for you in the cold Kentucky rain, in the cold Kentucky rain. Showed your photograph to some old gray-bearded men sitting on a bench outside a general store. They said, yes, she's been here, but their memory wasn't clear. Was it yesterday? No, wait, the day before. Finally got a ride with a preacher man who asked, were you bound on such a cold, dark afternoon? As we drove on through the rain, as he listened, I explained, and he left me with a prayer that I'd find you. Kentucky rain keeps pouring down, and up ahead's another town that I'll go walking through with the rain in my shoes.
Rain in my shoes.
Searching for